Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for sharing your Sunday with me. And on even a special Sunday like this, I want to shout out to all those moms out there. Well, the mothers, the grandmothers, the great-grandmothers, and let's not forget the great-great-grandmothers, because those are out there also. At any rate, hope you enjoyed your day. Hope your family took care of you. For those of you that may have spent a lonely day out there and you're listening, please feel free to feel that we're sharing our day with you. Okay, now that I got that out of the way, and before I forget, if anybody has any questions or comments that they'd like to share with us, give us a call at 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Or you can email me, as so many people do, at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. That's listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. Or if you want to get my blog or my email blast about upcoming show topics, hey, just send us a text and text that to Potts Associates and text that to 22828. All right? 22828. Just text it there. So text Potts Associates and text it to 2828. All right, and just enter your email address. It's really very simple. Okay, before I forget, I want to let you know that next week we're going to have a special guest on the show. Steve Cooley, the former Los Angeles County District Attorney, is going to be here talking to us about some things. So make sure you make a note of that to tune in next week. Again, that's going to be Steve Cooley, former District Attorney for Los Angeles County, is going to be here to share some time with us. So get your questions ready for him. Okay, today we're going to be talking about part two that had to do with violence in the workplace, but specifically we're going to hone in today on domestic violence and how it spills over into the work environment. We're going to be giving you some things to look out for, some tips, things of that nature as well. And we're also going to be talking about, well, unfortunately, there was another shooting this week, so we're going to be talking about student shooters from this past Tuesday, I believe it was. Out there in Colorado, we're going to be talking about a number of things with that. And we're also going to be talking about some college shootings also. I mean, this stuff is just getting to be really scary for folks out there. You know, going to school, trying to get an education. Now you've got to spend time thinking about these other things. It's once again, it's just a sign of the times. Sad but true. And we're going to have to get through it. Okay, let's talk about some emails that I got. First email. Jim, the 19-year-old student who shot up the synagogue says that the reason he did it was because he was inspired by the mosque attacks in New Zealand and Pittsburgh. With all of the talk about gun control, do you know how he got his gun? This is why we need to get our politicians going on this issue. Any thoughts on it would be appreciated. It's signed Susan, Albany, New York. Yes, Susan, well, I'm familiar with that. That individual, for those of you who do not know about this person, a 19-year-old college student, you guys. This guy even dialed 911 after he was done and said, I just shot up a synagogue. Now, I'm going to tell you, he told the dispatcher that he thought he had killed some people and that he did it because Jewish people are destroying the white race. This kind of thinking, people, you know, it's not healthy for us as a country, for sure. But it's not healthy worldwide as well. Now, I can tell you that the Justice Department filed 109 hate crimes against him and some other things as well. His name is John Ernest, John T. Ernest. And he could very easily face the death penalty behind this because a number of people were killed, including a 60-year-old person. You know, this lady was praying in the foyer of the synagogue, and he shoots and kills her. The charges include the attempted murders of 53 other people that were there. So it looks like he's going to end up paying the price. You know, sometimes with these shooters, they commit suicide and they don't pay the price. But in this particular case, it looks like, you know, since he's been caught, and obviously, you know, he's the one that called 911. But here's what tickles me. And when I say tickles, I mean in a derogatory way. Do you know that this individual had the nerve in his court appearance to plead not guilty. Not guilty. He called 911 and told them what he did, and he's pleading not guilty to the state charges of murder and attempted murder. And by the way, for those of you who do not know it, he actually had tried to, he's got a separate case going on now as well for arson. He tried to set a mosque on fire like 30 days before. And there were like seven people in there, and they were able to get out in time. But he actually set a mosque on fire. Now, he says that the reason why he had done these killings was because he was trying to defend his nation from the Jewish people and felt that they're destroying our people. You know, he told the dispatcher where he was at and that he would surrender to the authorities and leave his semi-automatic rifle in the car. He was apparently also wearing a chest rig with additional ammunition. The dispatcher asked him to remove it, which he did. The police arrived shortly thereafter and arrested him. And this guy's actually pleading not guilty. Well, go figure. That's all I can tell you. Now look, here's the sad part. The guy was a nursing student. And also, he's also a gifted pianist. I mean, you really have to wonder what is going through his mind. Now, some people would say, well, he must be mentally ill. Well, sometimes that's not what it is. He's already pleaded not guilty. We'll see what happens. Now, let me tell you, because Susan asked about him getting this gun. Well, Susan, I could tell you that a month after he failed to burn down that mosque, he actually bought an AR-15 rifle from a licensed dealer in San Diego. He had no criminal history. He bought it legally. See, it's the problem with gun control. I get it. Because if he wasn't able to obtain that weapon, what else could he have done? Well, look at what he tried to do. The first thing he tried to do was burn down a mosque with a bunch of people inside. People that have these crazy thoughts, and I hate to use the word crazy, okay, because somebody may say, that, well, then he's mentally ill. So I don't mean it that way. But people that have thoughts like this, in my opinion, they're always going to find a way. You know, we've debated about gun control a lot on the show, Susan, and I'm sure you've heard that if you're an avid listener. But at any rate, we'll see what happens to him. He's pled not guilty. I'm sure we'll see more of this on the news. I just don't know where that's going to go for him if he's the one to call 911 and told the police where to find him, and he was there when they got there. We'll see. All right, second email. Jim, another officer gunned down, this time in Mississippi. The guy killed the officer in the parking lot by the station. According to the news account, there was no motive. The guy was laughing when he was brought in, and he was walking past the TV reporters. This was cold-blooded murder. Where's the outrage like when a black person is shot and killed by a police officer? He was black. The police officer was white. There's no outrage. Why isn't there outrage? Vernon, Seattle, Washington. Vernon, listen, that's a hard road to go down. I understand it. When people just kill people and murder people, in my opinion, obviously that's problematic in and of itself. These things can be racially motivated. It doesn't look like that was racially motivated. I don't know. I don't know all the facts to it. Him shooting a police officer right in the parking lot at the police station, I mean, you have to wonder what he was thinking about. He obviously, you know, was, I don't know, he was upset about something, I guess. But it does make it very difficult. He's been caught at this point. It only took them, I think, a day or 2 days to catch him. And now he's in police custody, and we'll see what ends up happening. I don't know that Washington has the death penalty or not, but clearly for what he had done. Because he went inside the police station first, by the way. Yeah, he went inside the police station first and then went outside. So, you know, clearly that was planned. And here's another one. He's 19 years old. His name was Darian Atkinson. So, capital murder. That was in Biloxi, Mississippi. Now, you know, the officers cheered as he was brought out of the car because they were very happy, of course, that they got him. But it still remains unclear whether, you know, this particular officer was targeted or not. They were kind of withholding all of the details of the shooting itself. So we'll just wait and see. This individual that got killed, this police officer, and that makes, what, number 16, I believe it is, for this year. He was due to retire soon. So, once again, it's a shame. He was an Air Force veteran. He's got a wife, a daughter, two stepsons, and a stepdaughter. And now he leaves them all behind for reasons that are not clear yet at this point. So we'll just wait and see. You know, this past week I was doing some training on active shooter training, and one of the attendees and I was talking about how police officers don't panic and they kind of practice things over and over again, which we do. And the question that was posed then, how is it explained that when police officers, you know, gun down African Americans and also, this particular person used the word Hispanics, but now I understand out there we don't use Hispanics anymore, so we use Latinos as the more politically correct terminology. But at any rate, and I explained that, you know, police officers are not perfect. They make mistakes also. And some of these officers that use poor judgment, you know, and shoot people for no reason at all, so to speak, are... They need to pay the price that anybody else needs to pay. I mean, police officers are held to a higher standard. So I will say that, and I wanted to address that on the air as well, because I'm sure that goes through people's minds, to be fair. Police officers are not perfect, and some of them make mistakes. And when they do, they have to pay for their mistake just like anybody else does. Okay, Vernon, I hope that answered your question. Let's get to the third one. Jim, here we go again. Did you hear that the Florida governor signed into law that teachers can be armed? That is crazy. What are your thoughts? Elizabeth, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Well, Elizabeth, I have actually talked about that on the show before as well, and I'm not in favor of teachers being armed. The governor did sign it. It's allowing teachers to be armed in classrooms of public schools. Now, when things happen and public schools are impacted like this, sometimes people will take their children out of public schools and put them in private schools, but they don't want them, you know, to be a part of it. But I can tell you that they had debated this issue a lot. It was a very contentious bill, one of the most contentious bills in Florida for 2019. The law does not go into effect until October 1st. Now, I can tell you also that the teachers and other staff that are going to be armed, the school districts, they can opt out. It's called the Guardian Program, by the way. The Guardian Program. And it does allow teachers and other staff to volunteer to carry a gun on campus after getting screened and trained by the sheriff's office. So it's not really an automatic thing. They can volunteer to do it, or if they don't want to do it, they don't have to do it, which is okay also. I hope those who decide to do it understand that there's some serious, serious liability associated with this. For sure. Now, again, the outrage is from both sides because, you know, with the Parkland shooting that was in Florida, these are the reactions that people are going to have. Now, the initial program that they're rolling out with this, it doesn't allow teachers who exclusively perform classroom duties to carry guns. All right, so understand that. The initial program is not going to allow teachers who are exclusively performing classroom duties to carry guns. So there's some guidelines that are going along with this. So don't have this vision that you're going to see teachers in Florida all walking around with guns strapped to their hips. I don't think it's going to be like that. Now, the teachers that are going to be allowed to carry guns, they have to take special training. So understand that. From what I understand, I think they have to do at least 100 hours of training. So it's not like they could just go and get their gun. I'm a teacher. They got to go through all the training as well. And, you know, so hopefully the training will help with certain things. But again, I will emphasize, there's a hell of a lot of difference between when you're trained. I mean, even police officers, you get trained. Yeah, you train to shoot it, know the weapon and things of that nature. You know your background, what's behind the person that you're shooting at. There's a lot of points to it, but there's nothing like when that adrenaline is pumping when you're in an active situation. I don't know how they're going to be able to teach that. I mean, even if they have them practice, I mean, you know, all of this is 100 hours worth of training. So my thoughts are simple. I'm still against it. I think that the schools need to practice their lockdown procedures. They can have armed security guards on campus, whatever the case may be. You know, some people don't like that because they don't like their children in an environment that seems like, you know, people are walking around with armed guards. But, you know, once again, sadly, it is the times that we're living in, and we have to protect the children, and I get that. Now, again, I will also emphasize this stuff is not new. You've heard me talk about, historically speaking, that these things go back, you know, hell, 100 years. So it's not like this is totally new. It's just that now I think people are becoming a little bit more sensitive to it. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. Okay, that's the end of the emails. Again, if anybody wants to call in to comment on that discussion, the number is 818-602-4929. Or if you want to call in on any comments at all, that's fine also. Or, you know, suggestions, questions, whatever. Be glad to take them. Okay, now, last week we talked about the violence in the workplace, and we talked about some tips, some strategies, you know, for employers, employees, etc. I'm going to finish up with part two this week, and is what I want to talk about. It's going to be the domestic violence piece of violence. Oh, I'm getting a call here, so let's see who this is. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or a comment to share?
Yes, I do have a question that you brought up based on your talk last week about safety in the workplace. I liked a lot of the points that you brought out, especially the three things that's very important for employers to think about, which is being fair, firm, and consistent. I think that is very good information, as well as information that you mentioned about how employees view managers. I'm sure there could be a lot of negative things said there.
Absolutely. And let me make, wait, I don't mean to cut you off. Let me make a suggestion. Turn your volume down in the back, because we're getting the feedback. Like the show is still on in the background as you're talking.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Turn it down a little bit for us, and then you can go ahead and continue. What state are you calling from?
I'm in Richmond, Virginia.
Okay, very good. Okay, so I'm sorry. So you were saying about employees with the fair, firm, and consistent. Go ahead.
Right. I think that was very good information, because, like, especially on my job, they're not fair, firm, or consistent. And I think that can bring a lot of, you know, morale down for other employees. And this is why, you know, maybe some bad things can turn out from that. So they have to really watch that. And another thing that you brought out that was good, too, was how employees view managers. I'm sure a lot of negative things could be said there, you know, as well as in other areas on the job. But so my question to you is, do you have any information that maybe the viewers can get a hold of, you know, if we send in a stamp envelope to you like we did with the active shooter? Do you have anything like that that maybe we can have to just be able to look back at?
Yes. Okay. First, let me take one thing at a time. The answer to that question is yes, and I'll come back to it. But more importantly than that, I think what you're saying about the work environment, it's true. A lot of the times these issues come up because of disgruntled current employees and disgruntled former employees. To me, it's how the managers interact with these individuals, and I do agree with that. Look, the work environment is not a perfect environment, and I think that employees can have a tendency to be sensitive, especially if they feel that they're being mistreated. Now, mistreatment sometimes can be the perception of the individual, even though the manager is not intending it that way. It can easily come out that way because we all have different sensibilities. And that's why I think it's incumbent upon employers in general to do a certain amount of training of managers. You see, a lot of people get promoted into a managerial position because they did a really good job as an employee, and now they promote them into supervision. What they don't do is train them to be supervisors and managers. And that's where the failing is, and that's why it can create a morale problem, or you have the situations about them not being fair, firm, or consistent. Now, in reference to your question, yes, I've actually just completed what I'm calling a pocket guide of safety tips that'll cover a lot of different areas, and that's going to hopefully be ready. The publisher has it. It's going to hopefully be ready in the next 30 days, and I'll be making some announcements on there. If anybody's interested and wants to get on the list for these, they can just send me an email now. They can wait till it comes out when I make the formal announcement that those are available now. And they'll be available for purchase because it's going to cost us to do it. It'll be a nominal type of charge. It's not over the top. And it'll have a lot of safety tips in there for not only in the workplace, but when you're out and about in the general public and all of that. So I appreciate you asking me about that. So, yes, it will be.
Oh, well, that's really good. I'm happy to hear that because it is good information, things people should know about. At least I feel that way.
So you think that's going to be an important little book?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Because there's too many people that have issues on jobs, and if they knew what to look for and what to expect in certain situations, I think it would be very good for them to know that.
If it's that popular, maybe instead of me only charging a few bucks for it, maybe I need to charge about 30 or 40 bucks. What do you think? Just kidding. The more people say, Jim, why don't you do that? It's like, okay, wait a minute. If it's that popular, no, I'm just kidding. My point is, it will be a cost that everybody can afford very easily. I'm trying to get the message out for safety, and it's not about necessarily making a profit on it. It's about getting people out there to be safe. That's what my whole goal is with all of that. So thanks for the call, and I do appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a good
day.
Thank you. Happy Mother's Day for the Plies, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Take care. Thank you for calling in.
Okay.
All right.
Bye. All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah. You know, that was a call that's appreciated. Yes, I am working on a pocket guide of safety tips, and it'll be easy enough to keep in your shirt pocket or your pants pocket or in your purses, or guys with their man bags, they can keep them in there as well. So further developments on that. As soon as I have it available, I will let you know for sure. Okay, getting back to the violence in the workplace, and that caller brought up a very good point, you know, disgruntled former employees, morale issues, and things of that nature. But there's another part we have to really look at also. Because, you know, in my regular day-by-day job here, we get calls regarding, you know, suspected employees who are, you know, who are victims actually of domestic violence. So clients will call in, they've got a concern, person comes to work with a black eye, misses days and things of that nature, they're concerned, they want to know what they can do. I mean, this is serious for employers, no doubt about it. But the real issue is that employers are hesitant about involving themselves with an employee's personal relationships, because those situations can backfire as well, because his privacy is a legitimate concern. And finding the proper boundary between private and business affairs, hey, let me tell you, that can be a very difficult and sensitive matter. But domestic violence and stalking that come through the workplace door appropriately becomes the employer's concern too. That's what we have to understand. All right, it's becoming a big concern for employers. Why? It's very simple. Because if a person is in a domestic violence relationship and now that person comes up there looking for the victim employee, then the problem becomes anybody that gets in that person's way could be harmed as well. So just as a business takes responsibility for protecting its employees, you know, from assaults or robberies by outsiders, it is also responsible for protecting them against stalking and other possible crimes by domestic partners. And I will tell you, the studies have shown that the most common stalking situations that law enforcement has to deal with are those based upon some type of personal relationship, with women primarily being victimized by males as a result of this particular type of behavior. Now, look, you heard me mention about women okay, being victimized by males, but I want to make it clear because I don't want anybody writing into me saying, hey, guys can be, you know, the victims of domestic violence as well. That part is true. I think I've actually mentioned that on the air before. All right, guys can be victims of domestic violence. So those business owners or managers or supervisors out there, if you've got a male that comes to you and tell you that they're having an issue, hey, take it just as serious. Because even though the percentages are low, that's out there as well. All right. So look, let's take a look at some observable behaviors that may suggest possible victimization. You know, that a person may be, you know, in a domestic violence situation. Now, some of the states, California is one of them, now also have where the employer can get a restraining order on behalf of the victim employee. So I want to stress that as well. And I think in the past I mentioned it, but we're always gaining new listeners and wanted you to be aware of it as well. So, look, we got some behaviors that employers, and like I said, we get calls from employers, you know, and they're asking us about these things. Now, so here's a checklist for you, and I'll go down, and you can always, you know, if you can't write as fast as I'm delivering the information to you, you can always go back and listen to the show because all the shows are archived, all right? So the first one is tardiness or unexplained absences, all right? Tardiness or unexplained absences is one behavior that might tell you something is going on. The second one is frequent and often unplanned use of leave time. All of a sudden, they just come in, and all of a sudden, they need a week off or 2 weeks off. Okay, you can tell possibly something is going on. And couple that with the fact with number three, which is anxiety. Anxiety. Because people in those situations, you can see they're fidgety. You know, something is going on. They're antsy, so to speak. So watch out for anxiety as well. The fourth one is lack of concentration. Now, look, this person all this time may have been a person that was really good with their concentration, no issue, no problem. Now, all of a sudden, there's a lack of concentration. They just, you know, they're not doing their job. They're missing little things because they're not concentrating. That means they're distracted. They've got something going on. That normally leads to the next one, which is a change in job performance. Here, the person was a go-getter. Everything was going right. They're an excellent employee. They really do their job well. And now there's a change in their performance. And again, it could be going back to the last one because there's a lack of concentration. The next one is that there's a tendency to remain isolated from coworkers or the reluctance to participate in social events. Whereas before they did. They hung out with everybody, happy-go-lucky. You know, they had their little lunch group. And now all of a sudden they distance themselves from all of that. And that's normally because they don't want to be answering questions if somebody picks up on the fact that something's going on, all right? The next one is discomfort when communicating with others. All of a sudden, because they're afraid they're going to be asked these questions, going back to the last one as well, that they're going to be asked questions. Now the communication ends up being uncomfortable for them because they're afraid it's going to go in a direction they don't want it to go in. Because understand something also. About this business, about domestic violence. A lot of times the person back there in their home turns around and tells them, don't say anything, and you better not say anything. I had a client that called me a couple of weeks ago, and this person, as they later found out, was in fact a victim of domestic violence, and her husband used to come up on the job. He would just walk in on the job to check to see if she was there, what was going on. And a lot of times he would wait outside for her the whole day. It's like, well, wait a minute, doesn't that guy have a job? They just said, hey, we don't know. But he would literally sit in the car all day and wait for her to come out. That, to me, there's a lot of issues with that. Clearly there's issues with that. Again, I'm not a psychologist in this area, guys. All right? I'm sure there's a lot of stuff out there on the Internet. I'm giving you some basics here. Disruptive phone calls or emails. So now the person's at work. They're getting some kind of call. They're upset with the call. You can see something's going on. Goes back to the anxiety thing. That's another sign. Next one. A sudden or unexplained request to be moved from public locations in the workplace, such as sales or reception areas. So what is that telling you? They want to be out of harm's way. They want to be sitting back in an isolated place versus something that's freely accessible to somebody who just walks in. All right, so those are the kind of things you look at and say, okay, what's going on? What can we do? Now, look, before I forget, don't give out advice. When you hear about some of these active shooter situations, I tell people this in my active shooter class. Don't give out personal advice. If they're telling you, oh, my husband is cheating on me, or this is going on, that's going on, don't give them any, don't give them advice. You could be compassionate, you can listen, but be careful because they will carry your name home on their lips, and now that person comes up looking for you. Frequent financial problems indicating lack of access to money is another one. Unexplained bruises or injuries, put a check mark next to that one. That's the big one because they'll turn around and you'll ask them, what happened? How'd you get the black eye? You know, they've got a bruise. You can see they're trying to cover it up with the makeup. And all of a sudden, you know that that's out of place. You're asking them about it. And they're very hesitant to tell you anything because, remember, they've been told not to say anything. So when you see unexplained bruises or injuries to a person, and you know, I direct some of this to managers and supervisors as well. Co-workers, yeah, you know, co-workers are going to ask. But I think managers and supervisors need to try to get up on top of this because you got to remember there's also liability associated with having certain knowledge about things and doing nothing about it. So kind of keep that in mind. Then there's a noticeable change in the use of makeup, which is kind of what I was just telling you. Some of them will turn around and try and cover it up with makeup. Now all of a sudden the makeup is heavier because they're trying to, you know, cover up some bruises or related injuries like that. Inappropriate clothing, they say, is another one. I mean, look at that and say, huh, inappropriate clothing? Yeah, sunglasses worn inside the buildings or turtlenecks worn during the summertime. You know, so that might be something that you look at and say, okay, that's out of place, what's going on? The next one is disruptive visits from the current or former intimate partner. So I kind of explained that one a little bit ago when I talked about what this particular person was doing as well. All right? Sudden changes of address or reluctance to divulge where she is staying, or he, all right? So just remember, they all of a sudden they give a change of address in, or they don't want to tell you where they're living now or staying because they don't want the word to get out. Next one, we only have a few more of these to go. And actually, I should say a few more of these to go. This was a lot, to be perfectly honest with you, but yeah. Acting uncharacteristically moody, depressed, or distracted. All right. So just remember, Jim was a happy-go-lucky guy, and now all of a sudden, he's not himself. Now, next one. In the process of ending an intimate relationship, breakup seems to cause the employee undue anxiety. All right. So now the person has divulged, the relationship was over, but they've got all this anxiety. And don't trip on that one too hard because sometimes with breakups, there is a certain amount of anxiety with that. Now, court appearances, the person all of a sudden tells you, I've got to go to court, and they may not tell you why. That's okay. Now, let me just tell you, a lot of the states, California's one of them, have where there's actually, it's mandated by law that they can take off a certain amount of hours to go to court appearances, doctor visits, psychological visits with psychiatrists, etc. So there's leaves of absence from time from work to be able to do that. I mean, it's not like a week, but it's a day here, day there. They can do that in certain states. California, like I said, is one of them. And also for court appearances. Okay, then the last one is that the person tells you that they're a victim of vandalism or threats or whatever. Now all of a sudden somebody's been vandalizing their car. Guys have been through that with women throwing bricks through their cars. Generally, you don't really hear about guys breaking out car windows, but I'm never going to say that never happens. But a lot of times what guys face, because women know that guys love their cars, the brick through the windshield, the key in the car, things of that nature, where they take the key and scrape it. That's what I mean by keying, for those of you who do not know that that expression. But look, there's some behaviors to look out for. Again, be careful how you do it. You don't know the extent that some of these people are in with some of this, but just kind of keep it in mind, all right, because it's very important. Now, you got to also understand is that when an employee becomes aware that an employee is being stalked, harassed, threatened, or abused, and that risk has or may come into the workplace, the threat should be subjected to the same evaluation procedure as any other violent threat to assess the likelihood of violence and determine the best means of intervention. That's incumbent upon the employer. A lot of times people will keep this to themselves, but I would encourage those that are out there that are listening that might be the subject of any kind of violence in the home, you know, domestic violence, is that you can let your employer know. Give them a picture of the individual. It can be kept up there by the receptionist or managers, wherever it is, so that if the person appears on the premises, they're going to know who this is, all right? And then the authorities can be called. In addition to that, when you think about it, if they got a restraining order on behalf of the victim employee, or the employee has a restraining order, and this person appears on the premises, then that gives the employer the right to call 911 and have the authorities come up there and remove the person. Now, I can tell you in almost all cases, employers should advise police of the circumstances or risk of violence and possible criminal violations, if there's any, and get law enforcement involved. Now, I'm going to tell you something that this is not going to be easy for you to understand, but let me just tell you. Sometimes police officers, unless there's a restraining order, they really can't do too much. I mean, we get these calls, we go out to a home, we call them 415 families out here with the sheriff's department. Other people call it, domestic disturbances. But when we get there, you got to understand that if the person has only made a threat but they haven't done anything, there's not much the police officers can do. And for some people, they don't understand that. And it's true. Sometimes something actually has to happen before the authorities can do something. So kind of keep that in mind, but that's the sad part of it, but sad but true. Okay, that takes care of part two that I wanted to cover on the violence in the workplace. I want to talk about something else now and switch gears. Here we go again in Colorado, you guys. May 7th, 7 students were hurt, you know, in a shooting, you know, at the school again. Now, they do have two suspects that were taken into custody, and I'm glad to hear that, because a lot of times, you know, sometimes these people kill themselves, and now we don't really get to the truth of the matter. But this particular shooting happened at the Science and Technology School in the community of Highland Ranch. It's about 25 miles south of Denver, all right, south of Denver. And apparently what happened is that these two kids just burst into a classroom and basically just opened fire. Now, I'm going to tell you something. That gunfire in that classroom came only 1 week after a 22-year-old gunman opened fire in the Charlotte campus of the University of North Carolina. I mean, who knows? Who knows? These things sometimes give people ideas. That other shooting was only a week before. And now these two guys go in there, and they were students, by the way. All right? That particular school's got about approximately 1,800 students. And it's actually combined. It's like the elementary school, middle school, and high school is all on one campus. So that's going to be scary things, especially for the little kids, but, well, you know, older kids are going to be afraid as well. Now, I'm going to tell you something else on a statistic, guys. And I don't know why this is, but I'm going to give you this stat. Because let me tell you, some of the worst mass shootings in the United States have occurred in Colorado. I don't know what it is about Colorado, but these mass shootings have occurred in Colorado, a lot of them, the worst ones. And I don't know why that is. Because if you reflect back in 1999, two students killed 13 people at Columbine before committing suicide, and that remains one of the most deadly shootings in United States history. And then in 2012, a man opened fire at the movie theater in Aurora, remember that, during a screening of the Batman film. He killed 12 people and injured a heck of a lot more than that. So that's why I say this is Colorado. Now, I want to put some kudos out there as well, because three students jumped this gunman at this Colorado school. From what I understand, and, you know, this is out there in the news, but they disarmed the gunman. And that was good. They had no thought for their own safety. When they spotted the gun, they just jumped up and decided that they had to do something. It was automatic for them. And this is one of the things that I tell people in my trainings. We have to learn to start fighting back. You just can't sit there in a panic mode. These guys slammed that teenager, And by the way, it was a classmate of theirs, a classmate. So they recognized the person against the wall and struggled with him before the first shots rang out. And unfortunately, one of the three that grabbed this guy's name was Kendrick Castillo. He led the charge. He got hit, unfortunately, and he got killed. But one of the other ones were able to wrestle a gun away away from the shooter, and so they were able to save the lives. But it was the actions by these three kids that minimized the bloodshed. So this is what we got to do. We got to teach them. You got to fight back. You know, eight students got with the killing got injured. So it's tough. You know, we have to send a condolence out to the family of those injured, and not to mention the unfortunate Mr. Castillo, but he's a hero, and you can't put it any other way. He's a hero. So the other two guys that decided that they were not going to just sit there, that they were going to try and do something about it, one out of the three lost their lives, and it's a shame. Now, these attackers were identified as 18-year-old Devon Erickson and a 16-year-old. Mayor McKinney, Meyer, it could be pronounced. So they just walked in and just started shooting, and you will see what ends up happening to them. Now, the 18-year-old, I don't know if they're going to try these guys as adults or not. 18, he's definitely going to be. We'll see what they end up doing with the 16-year-old. But either way, it's nice to know that these guys were caught, and we'll just wait to see what actually happens to them. But again, our condolences goes out to those families of the ones that were killed or injured, and especially Mr. Castillo's family, is that their son was a hero. And, it's sad that he didn't make it through this, but I'm sure he's going to be honored because he and the other two young men saved many lives that day. But these school shootings we've talked about it before. These things are horrible, there's no doubt about it. But let me just tell you, if I had to ask you right now how many school shootings, we're getting a call. Let's see here. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share?
Yes, Jim. Ever since 9/11, we had a policy in New York that says, if you see something, say something. Now, after the shooting in Colorado, I understand that one of those the shooters talked about shooting fellow students, and nobody said anything. So to modify that, it should be, if you hear something, say something.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of these shootings could be prevented if people would just say something. They see a red flag or they hear a red flag. Say something.
I fully agree with that. I've talked about the fact that the San Bernardino situation, the first San Bernardino shooting we had out here, when the husband and the wife went in there during the Christmas party out there in San Bernardino at the government office out there, people knew, the neighbors knew something was up with these two people. They couldn't put their finger on it, but they knew something was going on, and yet they never reported. That happens a lot. That happens a lot, and it does happen with the school shootings. As you know, I've done a lot on the school shootings. I've done a lot of research about the school shootings, even with the Columbine and the Parkland. A lot of times with these school shootings, these individuals do say something to people, but they don't. Nobody takes it serious. We have to understand that you got to take it serious. If you see something, I agree with you. If you hear something, I agree with you. You've got to start speaking up. These young men apparently saw the guy bringing out the gun, and the moment they saw it, they didn't hesitate. You know, they jumped up and they did something about it. But I agree. Law enforcement can't do it by themselves. If you see something out there or if you hear something out there, you need to let law enforcement know. Or if it's in a school setting, I would agree with you. They've got to let the school officials know exactly what's going on. So I appreciate that. I think that that's good information, and hopefully our listeners will pay attention to that. If you see something, say something.
If you see something, say something. I mean, how many school shootings have to be before kids take seriously when another student says they'd like to kill people. I mean,
well, let me ask you a question. Do you have any idea how many school shootings that there has been so far in 2019? Do you have any idea? I see. Probably not.
20, 30?
No. We've got eight so far. And that's eight too many. But see, here's the problem. The average person is not going to know the answer to that question. Why? Because of the fact that, again, when these things happen, we have sympathy for the situation, but if it doesn't touch us personally, we move on. And the media moves on. They move on to something else. We've got to keep this in our conscious thought. And I'm not talking about making people paranoid. I'm simply talking about just stay aware of these things. But there's been eight this year. I'll give you an example. January 31st, Memphis, at Manassas High School in Memphis, Tennessee. All right? 14-year-old was involved in that. Okay? February 8th, Baltimore. Man entered Frederick Douglass High School and shot and injured a staff member, prompting students to hide, obviously. Police said that they believe that the gunman had targeted the victim, a 56-year-old special education assistant. And see, targeted. That's what the other thing is. It goes back to the caller before you when she talked about the fact that people in the work environment, about how, being the managers and supervisors being fair. When somebody gets upset about that, sometimes they go back looking for a particular individual. Next one, February 12th, Kansas City, Missouri. Teenage girl was shot and killed outside of a high school in Kansas City after an argument at an evening basketball game. These are shootings. Now, they're not mass shootings, but they're still shootings. February 26th, Montgomery, Alabama. 17-year-old student at Robert Lee High School was shot and wounded in an arm by another student. You know, the school was placed on lockdown under those circumstances, as you would expect it would be. April 1st, Prescott, Arizona. A 14-year-old eighth grader was shot and injured by a classmate. A classmate! Now, this person was 14 in eighth grade and shot by somebody his same age. Now, and look at the ages of these people. These are young people. April 30th, Charlotte, North Carolina. You know about that. Two students were killed and four others were wounded after a gunman opened fire in the anthropology class at University of North Carolina. And then, of course, May 7th, Colorado is the one I've been speaking about. But that one was in on May 7th, and another one on May 7th that people don't realize. Savannah State University student was shot and wounded in a residential hall on campus. But that was overshadowed by the other one that we just talked about that was at the school. You know, so at any rate, it's true. We have to understand that these things are getting more and more serious. You know, the issue of gun control is always going to be there. But I tell you something, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but the students in Colorado that did that shooting, you have any idea where they got the guns from?
The parents?
Parents. That just tells me that the parents out there, there are some parents out there, I should say, because I don't want to get the hate mail, that are not being responsible in the way that they are securing their guns.
Yeah.
You know, these kids at 14 and 13, they're not walking into a gun store. Some of these states like Florida have now turned around and passed laws. You got to be, 21 years old and this and that and this and that. How does that protect anybody if the parents aren't being responsible?
And then when a kid commits a crime with their gun, they play like, gee, I'm shocked. I can't believe he did it.
Right. And you know what? That's a fair comment because some parents don't know. You know, some parents say that it is a shock. And even some of the people, you know, after the shooting occurs, say we never would have guessed that he would have done anything like this. I mean, sometimes we don't know what some of these individuals are thinking, and it's a shame. Some of them say things, some of them don't. Some of them keep it to themselves. But that's why parents, in my opinion, have got to be just a little bit more aggressive with how they're monitoring their kids. You know? Now, I'm going
to
tell you.
I'm willing to bet at least half the time that there's a red flag somewhere that somebody would notice. It has to be a red flag. And the problem is people ignore the red flags. And that's when tragedies happen because people ignore it.
I don't disagree at all with that. And that's why I constantly say that when I do these active shooter trainings, I tell parents, you know, and people that are in attendance that you have to monitor your kids. You got to figure out what they're doing on the internet. Look at what they're doing. Look at the sites they're visiting. It's all of that. So at any rate, well, look, I really do appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much for that. And hopefully the listeners will pick up on that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, you know, again, these things all speak for themselves. It's a question of what parents are willing to do, not do in some of these cases, not all cases. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show, but let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Be sure to join me next week because we're going to have a special guest next week. As I told you, we'll have the former LA County District Attorney, Steve Cooley. He's written a book. We'll be talking about that. There's a possibility he might have his co-author with us as well. So that sounds all pretty exciting. So please put it on your calendar so that you can join us next week. And by the way, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Until then, be aware, be vigilant, be safe, but more importantly, be a reluctant victim. See you next week.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.